始まるざますよ。
行くでガンス。
ふんが。
まともに始めなさいよ。
This is Anime Diet Radio, episode number 9, or, as I still like to think of it, Scattered Cells, episode number 19.
You're just thinking that because now we have one more than an Anime Nano podcast.
And not, again, as, and it's not because I'm gloating, it's just because we really owe our existence to them in many ways. And so once again, like in my tribute last week, I want to thank Hang and everybody involved in Anime Nano and for giving us, or giving me and all of us, a push into the wide world of podcasting. I am your host, Michael Huang, and these are my co-hosts. Please introduce yourselves.
I'm Raymond Hugh from Taipei. It's morning here.
This is Jeremy from Los Angeles.
Isn't that the same? You said it the same way that you said it the last time, man. I thought you were going to do a different way of saying it every time.
I think there's only so many ways you can say
I think there is only so many ways, unless I went with an Austrian accent or an Irish accent or something like that. Started the accent things, I think. Well, but, you know, that'd get kind of played out, and my voice acting skills would be shown for the really limitedness.
Hey, we can all make fun of Japanese accents, right? So we can go Los Angeles.
Yeah. I'm not so sure how Japanese that was, but, you know,
I'll take your word. Well, doesn't the stereotype go that Japanese people can't pronounce L's correctly?
Yeah, L's.
Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I missed the R in there.
Yeah, the it reminds me of that infamous scene in Lost in Translation where it's like, you know, or where that whore comes into Bill Murray's room and she goes like, "Rip my stocking."
Hey, she's a working woman. I don't appreciate her you're just going straight for the jugular with the whore come in.
I only comment on what I saw.
Rip my hose.
I thought you said you were straight for the jugs.
Yeah, straight for the jug, Euler. you know, that's actually was a really entertaining movie, but very controversial in some ways. So.
Yeah, a lot of Japanese people didn't like it. Yeah, kind of understandably, but it was it did sort of play up the whole weirdness aspect to Japan. Like, there was an outtake in the show where Bill Murray appears on one of those Japanese like TV shows where it they goes,
Babu Babu Babu.
Yeah. And it's like a caricature of everything like we know about Japanese pop culture. It's got all those really weird bright colors. The announcer is like an insane like maniac. And like,
did it have a samurai swinging sword at a samurai hotel?
Yeah. See, in my opinion, though, those are the things that are fun about Japan in many ways. Those are the things I kind of like. And actually, what I felt about that movie, not to get off on it too much, because this is an anime podcast, but was that it really did show just kind of the lost situation that the Americanized characters were in. The very American characters, they were just completely clueless as to what was going on and what to do. And so I think it kind of, on that side of it, did in some ways kind of lampoon the American tourists for just really not having a clue. So.
Yeah. All right. Why don't we go ahead and move on to some recent news?
From Los Angeles, California, and Taipei, Taiwan, this is the ADR Evening News.
From Anime News Network, the election administration of Yamagata Prefecture in northeast Japan has recruited Osamu Wakai, a comic talent most famous for impersonating, quote-unquote, Mobile Suit Gundam's main character Amuro Ray in improbable television sketches to promote voter turnout. Wakai appears dressed as Amuro on posters and in public service announcements and on television and radio. The theme of the campaign for the July 29th elections is Senkyo Ikimasu! An homage to Amuro's Gundam Ikimasu line when launching his title robot. Wakai appeared in the episode of the TV Champion 2 contest program that crowned the foreigner king of Akihabara. This has been NPR News from Washington. Yeah.
Dude, your Japanese is wrong, dude. Yeah. It's Amuro Ikimasu!
Yeah, this is great. This is one of the things just in what we're talking about that really illustrates the difference between a Japanese society and ours. I mean, just the lack of any fear of over commercialization.
yes.
I mean, if any candidate basically came out there and had a a Pokemon character come out and do announcements for them, they would be sunk. Pretty much. I mean,
yeah.
That would be it. But
votes!
It's
votes!
It's,
gotta collect them all!
I mean, it's a grand thing to watch. I mean, this the 50-second Windows Media video that they have of this public service announcement, we'll call it, is just terrific. With him walking along the wooden bridge and then soaking his feet in the river and doing the salute and asking everybody to come to vote. I mean, it's just, wow. Not only is he a space boy, he's a hometown boy at that.
And it's actually, again, it's actually not somebody who was connected to the anime, it seems. It's really actually a comedian who's like an impersonator of that character. And so it's sort of like asking the fake Sean Connery who goes on Saturday Night Live on the Jeopardy skits to right. go and like make an announcement as
fuck
James Bond.
Fuck her! And you don't have to beat me there.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, and I don't know. I mean, you say he's a comedian. I actually just put up just a little bit of information about him on Wikipedia, but I really didn't look too in detail about it. It's funny because he really... I could be misinterpreting this. Maybe he is just trying to play this serious character. But if you look in his eyes while he's doing this, he's like, really? I just needed the paycheck. I mean, that's really what his eyes say to me as an actor. It's, I really just needed a paycheck. So, interesting.
I wonder how much he was paid.
I wonder.
Yeah.
Japanese will do anything for their jobs.
You know, and I wonder if they have any kind of, I know, like, we have some restrictions on ad campaigns and stuff like that, things, you know, certain contributions and whatnot. I wonder if they're skirting the lines of any Japanese regulations on that. If people are scrambling in the other party to find out, you know, misuse of, you know, political funds to hire the otaku, to reach out to the otaku vote.
It's a campaign actually by the election administration. It's not by a particular political party. It's like if the it's like the local like equivalent of the FCC here, the federal FEC, Federal Election Commission. It's supposedly it's you know in theory nonpartisan. So he's not working for a political party. He's just trying to tell people go out and vote.
Well, you know it's interesting. It's interesting though because like it seems like the from what I'm reading here that it's the Liberal Democratic Party, which is actually ironically named the conservative faction in Japanese politics.
That's right.
From this,
yeah,
it is trying to get the otaku vote.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. The Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is resorting to the otaku vote in his tough fight to maintain the Liberal Democratic Party's control. He basically launched his campaign by appearing in Akihabara, and he even told the outdoor crowd that the battle starts from here.
On that note, I mean, how desperate do you have to be doing that? I mean, how much more pandering can you get?
Oh my god! It's like if Al Gore were to come back and he goes to a track convention.
Yeah.
Save the hunchback whales.
Yeah. or do a hip-hop rap on saving the environment, you know, to a bunch of, you know, inner-city kids. I mean, which I'm not entirely sure he hasn't done, so we might need to check, but...
Yeah. I mean, the is that a line, actually, from an anime, The Battle Starts From Here, by any chance?
That's so generic.
It sounds very generic to me. I didn't say... I was under the impression that maybe it was related to Gundam or something, but... Well,
what's his name again? What's the guy's name again?
Shinzo Abe.
Okay, maybe he should say, Shinzo, ikimasu!
I don't know.
Right, right.
No idea. Apparently, Japanese politicians are beginning to think that the otaku vote is actually worth pursuing, despite, from what I've seen, polls suggesting that the current young generation of Japanese is incredibly apathetic about politics, even by American standards. So, good luck if they have to resort to using a Gundam impersonator to get votes. Well, we'll see how that works. So, and go ahead and move on to the next news item. As otaku on the East Coast are probably aware, this is the weekend of Otakon 2007. I myself have actually attended about 3 Otakons from 2003 to 2005. And Otakon, is being the second largest convention in the country, is usually the site of numerous major licensing announcements. And we have 2 very prominent licenses which were announced just this weekend. Funimation has licensed Ouran High School Host Club for the fangirls, and Bandai...
Ooh, yay! Awesome!
And Bandai has licensed Code Geass.
Ah! Sugoi! Sugoi, sugoi, sugoi!
And so basically, those are probably the 2 biggest fan favorites which have been acquired, and... though I think I will find it interesting, first of all, how Bandai is going to market the very explicitly political overtone in Code Geass. And as for Ouran, well, I think that show pretty much sells itself, considering that there was a host club tea event at the last AX.
Right.
That they felt that if they felt that was already enough, and I saw so many Ouran costumes, you know, both this year and even last year, when the show was still airing in Japan. So
now, I think we're all kind of surprised that, and maybe somebody else could correct us if we've made some sort of mistake, that only just recently was licensed.
That, yes, yeah.
You know, I wonder if they were waiting to see, you know, like, what the response would be at some of the conventions to, you know, either to announce that or to, I mean, I wouldn't see any reason to hold it back, but... Or even just to pick it up. Maybe they were still in negotiations or something.
Because I remember announcing several episodes ago that Ouran was licensed. Mm-hmm. And I apparently was mistaken, actually, because I remember even like last week I saw it on Anime Suki. And, you know, a show's presence on AnimeSuki.com is usually a fairly reliable indicator of whether it's been licensed or not. So it's... So, sure. But apparently, I was under the impression that Right Stuff had actually picked it up.
Oh wow!
For some reason, I don't know why. I have no idea where that came from.
So did we print a retraction, or I mean, how does that work?
Are you a mole? Are you a mole for Right Stuff now? I thought you were a mole for Gainax.
Well, you know, I'm working both sides of the fence.
Yeah, I mean,
not to be confused with playing for both sides of both teams, but.
No, that's a very appropriate joke with Ouran.
Oh, I apparently have learned something just now.
Yeah. Yeah, the baseball metaphor. Yeah, is exactly...
Okay, no, you're saying like, playing both sides, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pitch, you know, with batting for both teams, something like that.
Preferring clams and oysters.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, well, let's...
Play pocket pool!
Yeah, before this goes any further downhill, let's. but that actually brings up something kind of semi-important too that I meant to mention to you. I know a while back, and I had noticed this, and I forgot to bring it up, is we had mentioned that the same company that had released the anime of Gunslinger Girls had on their budget for the next a new season of it. And actually, the next week or the next day, there was actually another news item saying that they had then removed it. So, apparently, that is not something that is necessarily in the workings. So, for those of you that heard us say that a new Gunslinger Girl was coming out, you may want to rethink that if you were.
You mean the second season for this?
Yeah. I don't know. It only ran one season, so I guess it would be.
Right.
It wouldn't necessarily be the second season because they haven't.
Right.
It ended a while ago, but it would be a new series.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unlike Black Lagoon. Okay.
Right.
You know, not to going off to too far of a tangent, but they had played with, well, CSI, the crime thing for Las Vegas version. They basically play with the idea of a host club. I said, really? Was it Las Vegas? I think it was Las Vegas, yes. They had one episode. Yeah, one episode that basically, like, I was just watching an episode like, oh, okay, it's Grissom, it's all these other, it's Catherine, it's all these people, and all of a sudden they talk about host club, and I just like, whoa, did you say host club? And I just woke me right up. I was like, wow, and then it was exactly a format, like, girls go to this place with a random bunch of guys, and those guys supposedly fall in love, and he's, and the guy says, and I quote from the show, I now have approximately 27 relationships, which I'm keeping.
Wow. So, apparently there is definitely, I hear about hostess clubs in Japan all the time, actually.
Oh, yeah.
The one that caters to guys. And and it was, I was always assuming that the ratio of hostess clubs to host clubs was a pretty, small ratio. But, or rather, there were a lot more hostess clubs. But I guess Las Vegas would be definitely the place in America you would find someplace like that. Especially considering Las Vegas has tons of Japanese tourists.
Right.
Yeah.
Now host clubs, is that actually something that does exist outside of... I understand the hostess clubs, but host clubs, is that something fairly common in Japan, I wonder? I think it's probably just a anime... fantasy for
but if a TV show uses it, I mean, unless the
I mean, if it's on TV, it's got to be real, right? I mean, or is that what...
well, that's kind of like an idiom.
It's in an anime, it's got to be based on some sort of reality.
Yeah.
I mean,
come on.
We all know that there are like huge government, like secret organizations that have big mechas that fight aliens all the time on our behalf.
I know.
Actually, you never know. Just kidding.
It might have a cloaking device, just like in Bokurano.
Oh, I was going to say Klingons, but anyway. Shows my geeky roots. Damn.
We're all geeks.
But anyway, I think even if there are real host clubs in Japan, probably came out in the recent years where women are, I don't know, a little bit more
asserting
vocal,
themselves
perhaps?
A little bit.
Yeah, probably.
A little more empowered, if you can call that empowerment. I don't know.
I mean, you say least... on anime, yeah, I don't know, but if the American TV show actually uses this idea, you know, it has to be somewhat real, right? Unless what's his name? What's the director of the show? Unless he just decided to look at our host club, which I don't think so.
No. What is it? There's that other show, the new show called Heroes, which actually has a Japanese character who, he speaks in Japanese a good part of the time, and all the Japanese dialogue is correct. And he's a big manga nerd. And so they're starting to, like, take all these ideas from manga and anime and incorporate it even into American television. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised that becomes a trend in the near future.
Yeah. Is it the Three Stooges humor going to come back? Are they going to have that again?
You know, I'm really thinking that, we've discussed this before, that we are seeing a lot of mainstreaming of anime culture nowadays.
Oh.
And it's really changing the face of the quote-unquote otaku. And, I think, we intended to talk about this. Maybe this would be a good time to move into that.
Do you guys want to move into that, or do you want to talk a little bit about the new season first?
So yeah, let's definitely discuss that after we talk about the new season.
right? We are about 3 weeks, I think, into the summer season.
Yeah.
And the summer is a time usually when some of the kind of, I would call it the second tier shows, get put out, because usually the action is, you know, the focus of most studios is in the spring and the fall.
Right.
When they bring out the big guns, usually.
Right.
And so summer is usually for some of the second round shows or second seasons. Or continuation.
You said big guns. Titanic guns.
Yeah. And so I want to actually just talk about just one show that we haven't covered yet on our in the last podcast that we did. And I want to talk about School Days now. School Days is an anime that was based on an eroge. But of course, with all the hentai stripped out and fan service, and it is.
You mean the stuff I found on your hard drive? Oh,
I neither confirm nor deny that accusation. And basically, it's a fairly standard love triangle school drama that would otherwise be unremarkable, except for the fact that the game was very well known for its brutal, violent, and incredibly depressing endings. And so, like Higurashi, every innocent moment of the show is basically tinged with the prospect of menace, and you already see some pretty disturbing hints that especially the main guy is not a very nice guy, and that he is capable of being violent, and capable of basically being more than just a jerk, but somebody who is capable might be of doing some pretty bad things.
Everything with you is about Eva. Oh wait.
And I think this is a little different from Eva. This is more like what is it? Kimi ga Nozumo Ain. It's that, which is another game-based show, which turned very dramatic and very depressing. And in it too was centered around the love triangle. You know, it's plot-wise, it's not very unique. It's about a guy who likes this really cute, soft-spoken girl, and there's another girl who likes him, but she isn't willing to totally admit it. But she's trying to set him up with the other girl. She's frantically doing all these kind of matchmaking efforts, but really as an excuse to get close to him. And he's not aware of it, of course, because he's a dumb guy, and he's
like,
clueless like all
many
of us.
Yeah,
he's really clueless, and he can't read the signals, and which are patently obvious to anybody with half a brain who's actually watching. And so it's
make us look like Dr. Love.
I mean, like, this other girl, the one that he's not interested in, they keep passing notes to each other in class. Like, literally. Like, they're just writing notes on their little notebook because they sit next to each other. And it's so cute, and it's almost romantic in its own kind of weird way. The series is actually really interesting in that it has almost no background music. And a lot of the dialogue is actually surprisingly, for a show of this kind of genre, it's actually relatively realistic. Like, the awkwardness between the characters, the way they want to try to say something, but they have an inability to do so, and they try to get around it. All that interaction is actually relatively believable, and I consider that a plus. It's believable, but again, unless you know for a fact that the ending is going to be really bad, then it's otherwise would seem very conventional and very soap operatic drama. And so if, like Higurashi, you kind of thrive on that sense of menace, even in the most innocent and over-the-top comedy scenes, then you might enjoy School Days. So that's my piece on the show.
I'll go next.
Go ahead. Yeah. No means, Rick.
Yep. So last week I've introduced Mushiuda. Excuse me. 2 weeks ago I've introduced that. Well, I've watched about 3 episodes now, and here are my thoughts so far. Well, first of all, I make fun of it all the time, and I say, well, instead of cyberpunk, it's bugpunk. But I think the deeper undertone with it is that it's a topic that I think Japanese in general, and definitely in anime, has been explored for a long time. But in Japanese in general, it just began to come to surface, like in the most recent maybe 10 years. that the prejudice against a group of people. I mean, sure, in the show, the Mushigi, the people infected by the, bitten by these bugs are supposed to be diseased and have superpowers. But, you know, so far, they haven't done any harm to anyone else, at least not from what we have seen. So basically, what happened is that, and if you look at the show, those people are usually teenagers or kids. The show is almost talking about kids and teenagers growing up and the things and changes that make them different from what the society expects and from what the adults expect or the good kids. You know, by good kids that we have, the protagonist is one of the hunters for Tokan, the organization that's hunting these people and putting them into, I suppose it's more like a protection facility, but you know what it is. It's an insane asylum, basically. Okay. So basically, the kids are who are different from each other, people who are different from each other, and they're basically getting put into concentration camps. You know, if you want to go that far. And I think that's the deepest undertone of the show. Basically, you know, it's been talking about thousands of times before. Now, usually within the anime makers community, you know, the Japanese animators, that this gets talked about and things gets accepted, but these are sort of things that, you know, like sometimes they just don't get talked about a lot, or they get glossed over, or it's kind of funny, you know, like, or it's kind of stereotypical. You know, I think an earlier example you can go back is Macross. You know, why am I going back to Macross? Well, Macross was made in 1983, and guess what? You have a black person, Claudia, and she's the second officer on the bridge. And of course, Roy, who's the leader of the Skull Squadron, loves her, right? But see, when you talk about these sort of things, you know, have the Japanese still like the Japanese? I mean, Ichijo, who's the main pilot, likes Misa Hayase. And sorry for all the Robotech folks out there, look it up. Anyways, so yeah, but we can go back as early as that. Exactly. Let's just not pick on this guy. He tried. You know, he's no Arnold. He tried. But anyway, you know, you're even going back as early as that, you had, you know, like racial mixes in Japanese anime. You know, like anime can see as an idealism, I guess, in that sense, in the Japanese society. But in recent years, you have a lot of dealing with the group that's different. And I think in Mushiuta, it's kind of gets taken a notch higher, I guess, in where like people who are different are being like sent to concentration camps. Ooh, and I think that's the show's undertone. And of course, the Mushitsuki's people, that was kind of repetitive. They are forming a group trying to protect themselves. And the conflict comes when the leader of the Mushitsuki group is in the same school as the hunter boy. I wish I know the names better, but the names are kind of difficult here, and I'm stupid gaijin. So anyway, so basically they're in the same school, and she likes the hunter boy, but the hunter boy like this other girl who got reformed, and she kind of escaped from the concentration camp. And there's the other conflict that comes in. So basically, yeah, the show has an excellent background, especially in episode 1, I suppose. You see some Miyazaki-like background talking about desolate towns. That was what struck me. The hunter boy walks through the streets, and he saw these shops that are closed. You know, low shops that used to thrive back in the 80s, perhaps, or early 90s, but they are closed. Very close. And I'm not sure, but it might be referring to some sort of institutional, the big corporation or organization is taking over, which is in a contrast, the government rounding up these people. Yeah.
It kind of reminds me, actually, of the current take on the X-Men and the X-Men movies. Because if any of you remember, the very first X-Men movie, like the big cinematic ones, starts off in Auschwitz. It starts off in the ghetto of the Holocaust, and it was, and Bryan Singer, the guy who directed most of the X-Men movies, made a very explicit link between the persecution of mutants and kind of the Holocaust, and then Magneto uses that as a pretext to justify like violent retribution. And it sounds like Mushiuta is starting to get into similar kind of territory in a way. Am I right when I say that? Is that a good comparison?
It kind of is like that. The leader of the Mushikis have been thinking about becoming Magneto. Like, they're just looking for utopia.
Okay, so they're not. There's not flocking to like a demagogue who claims to represent them and wants to fight back against their oppression yet.
Oh, I haven't seen anything like that. No.
Okay. Yeah. That sounns really interesting. Jeremy, did you watch Mushiyuta by any chance?
I did not. Basically, what I know about it is what I've heard from Ray thus far.
And, yeah, I believe only one episode is out in English at the moment, actually. And it just came out a few days ago. So Ray is way ahead of the curve here compared to a lot of us English-speaking fans. Yep. So I hope that's probably some valuable information for people out there who are interested in the show, but there's only, you know, a limited number of episodes released in English right now. So if you're interested in that, so would you say it's a relatively serious in its tone or in its mood?
Yeah, pretty much it's serious. It's got some comedy. I mean, you have comedy relief characters, but I wouldn't go to a comedy. I would say drama.
Okay.
Drama action. Mm-hmm. And like I say, it's got some cyberpunk elements because those people are wearing goggles and, you know, other people with powers, but they're hunting them down with guns. You know, that's kind of Witch Hunter Robin like, but again, it just gave me an impression of bug punk. Right.
Right. It's interesting because there's not that many shows in anime that deal with current political issues in Japan.
Right.
Like one of the few is probably the Ghost in the Shell television series.
Right.
Those tend to be pretty political in a very interesting way. But you mentioned that like it seems that they're trying to deal with people who are different.
Yes.
Like people who stick out. The thing is that Japan's population is in serious decline. Their birth rate is very low. And so they're seriously considering allowing a lot more immigration into Japan.
Oh,
and that, especially, they're trying to get, interestingly enough, they have a long-standing relationship with South America. Which was emblematized by the fact that the former dictator of Peru was actually a Japanese immigrant. His name was Alberto Fujimori. He was the dictator of Peru for like more than 10 years.
Dictator, and,
yeah.
And he's Japanese.
And he's a Japanese Peruvian. And so, you do you remember in Excel Saga, there was Pedro?
Yes.
A kind of like a construction worker who was living in Japan who spoke in really badly accented Japanese. That is because there are, in fact, some South American workers who are beginning to immigrate to Japan to find work. And given that Japan is one of, if not the most homogeneous society on Earth, that is a problem for a lot of Japanese. That's something that a lot of Japanese don't appreciate. I mean, some people accuse Americans of being xenophobic. Well, in Japan sometimes their attitude toward newcomers, just simply because they don't see that many of them, you all get lumped as, especially in rural towns I hear, as gaijin,
And I think, and definitely it has negative overtones to it at the very least. But I think just the fact that they, are trying to maintain their culture and not lose their culture identity, I mean, I think in many ways is a positive thing. And the fact that I see a lot of, just personally, my commentary on that is I see a lot of positive things about the fact that they have a very tight-knit society. But, I mean, obviously they're very, very negative. So when you're talking about people that are different, I think there's one of my Japanese friends is telling me there's a saying they have. It's like the nail that sticks out gets hammered down.
Yeah. So it's an old proverb. Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean it's both good and bad, I guess, in many ways. Just having a tight knit community where kids can be raised with some amount of accountability and whatnot, I think is positive. And there's a certain amount of responsibility in the entire community to raise the next generation, I think can be good, but obviously it can have its negative side too.
No,
just my take on that.
It's quite difficult. It's difficult.
No, it's really tough sometimes to balance that need, because again, if your native community, like it is in Japan, is in serious, like, numerical decline.
Right.
Especially since with the aging of the population in Japan. And this was really interesting because this was brought up. I just recently watched Ghost in the Shell Solid State Society to bring it back to anime. And that show deliberately or very specifically talks about the aging problem in Japan.
Wow.
That there are so many older people and not enough young people to take care of them.
Because a lot of young people don't want children nowadays.
Exactly.
Are actually, you know, very indignant about making sure they are not having children. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And abortion law in Japan is so loose. It's very relaxed. Yeah, it's very relaxed. Like the basic, the reasons for abortion can be, it's financially impossible for the mother. It brings difficult to the family, and it harms well-being of the mother, something like that.
Right, right.
And that you can interpret it to very loose terms. Basically, you can walk in and get it.
The rule in America is actually very similar.
Yeah.
The health of the mother can be interpreted in not only the physical health but also mental health, I believe, and that is the. But this is again not a political podcast, so it's true. Anime these days is bringing up
very serious issues,
important contemporary political issues, and it's something that, you know, I mentioned in the previous news item, the current generation of Japanese is reportedly very apathetic, and any move toward engaging people in serious political discussion and social discussion, I think, is commendable.
Right.
And especially if it's done with some level of intelligence and seriousness.
But I would say, too, aside from the seriousness that we find in anime, we still find the same old comedy aspects. And that would lead me on to just say a little bit about one of the new shows of the season.
Cool.
Kenko Zenrake Sui Ebu Umisho. I probably horribly butchered that, but it's as one person has said already, that could well be given the award for longest anime title, and for short, many people are calling it Umisho. Basically, it's kind of like, to put it simply, a harem anime in aquatic life. What would you say at that point?
Oh, is this sticky and wet?
Well, basically, the main character, Okiru... I'm going to say that wrong. Let me repeat that. Okiura Kaname is a... He's the...
Oki!
Yeah, Oki. Right, he's the coach of the swim team.
Oh.
But the thing about it is, he actually cannot swim a bit. In fact, has a severe fear of water because of one time that he nearly drowned. And during that time, he remembers what appeared to be a mermaid pulling him into the water. So, it's kind of an odd setup, but a new student comes to the school from, shall we say, overseas, on a houseboat. And she's a very unusual student who has an affinity for water, really excellent swimmer, and the only kind of swimming she knows is pretty much in the ocean, because the first time she tries to swim in a pool, she doesn't realize there's boundaries and pretty much knocks herself out on the edge of that. So, it's your standard fan service, fanfare, pretty much, in many ways. Many of the gags involve the new student being, and by the way, her name is Nina Gawa Amaro, and involves her swimming her favorite way, naked. So when she's not doing that, she's running around in a small white t-shirt and that is loosely buttoned in the top, at the top, to show a lot of cleavage, and little white panties, basically. So if that isn't enough to draw the fanboys in, you know, I don't know what it is. When she's not wearing that, she is, however, wearing her school uniform with a swimsuit underneath that she can quickly go swimming in. So, yeah, it's entertaining. The colors are really bright and vibrant. Kind of reminds me a lot of Chobits and the way that it's... has a very excessive use of color in many ways, but to good effect. It's some of the characters actually they have some kind of oddball characters that kind of remind me of the character designs a little bit from Ping Pong Club.
really?
If you've ever seen any of that, no other semblances, mind you. So if you're looking for an anime like Ping Pong Club, you found. Pretty much the wrong anime, I think, but it is just for fun, a popcorn anime, plenty of fan service if you're into that sort of thing, harem stuff, you know, give it a go. It's not terrible, it's entertaining. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, Umi Show has there have been 3 episodes released in English so far actually, and it's just under the title Umi Show if you're looking for it on AnimeSuki.com.
I just like to point out the character, the girl character that just Nina, right? Lena, mm-hmm. Nina, right? She's kind of like the perversion, but she's kind of like a modification of the big sister running around in underwear and panties type, because she's not the big sister of anybody.
Right.
I think the idea is that she's supposed to be a mermaid or something. Is that it?
Right. There's this kind of a hint. And I guess I could put that in. It's not any kind of spoiler, and I kind of purposely left it out. But she seems to, and you find this out within the first episode, seems to remember the main character, Okiura, from somewhere. Like, don't I remember you? I know you from somewhere. I'm sure I know you. And leans into his face really close to the point that it almost seems to be reminiscent of the mermaid face that he sees. Except a little less scary. They kind of present the mermaid face as being something kind of deviously sea creature-esque. So. Mm.
Yeah. You know, if you use that pickup line on a girl, she'd laugh at in your face and walk away.
What pickup line is that?
You know, do I remember you from somewhere?
Oh, yeah.
Think that I've seen you before. Under the sea, maybe?
Yeah.
Did you come out of the sea?
Did you try to drown me one time? I vaguely remember that. I think you owe me a date, since you kind of scarred me for a lifetime of that I no longer
Exactly. A girl says it? Oh, yeah.
Let's go to the water park.
Yeah. I could have sworn I had seen you swimming naked before.
Let's go to Florida.
Yeah, that one's pretty much guaranteed to get you slapped, but...
yeah.
But anyhow, yeah, just quick impressions of Umi Show. I've only seen, like, I think that there are 3 episodes out now, but I've only seen the first one. Skim some of the other ones.
All right. I am... thinking we should all talk about the Setsubou Sensei.
Sayonara. Let's do.
Sayonara Zetsubou Sensei, or I translated "Goodbye, Mr. Despair," but it's literally "Goodbye, Despair Teacher."
Right.
And it's basically it's one of the most original, probably the most original show certainly of this season, and probably it's one of my contenders for the originality award this year overall.
It's sick. It's sick. Say it with me. It's sick.
Sick. Bitchin'.
Awesome.
It definitely is a great new show. I from what small portion I've seen, and my problem is, you've probably picked this up as of now, sometimes in reviewing anime, is I'm generally watching kind of a broader spectrum of anime, or I'm watching, like, kind of sucked into a particular group of series, and since I'm generally so busy otherwise, I have generally a chance to watch a few of the new series, but don't get to follow up with the subsequential new episodes. But from the first episode, one of the drawbacks, I'd say, to this, just start off, I can start out that way and I can get to the really good stuff, is the fact that it is a lot of play on words. It is a lot of play on Japanese puns and configurations of kanji or the Chinese-Japanese characters and how that they're mm-hmm. they're written out, and if you write them out a certain way or mm-hmm. use a particular character set, it actually has an entirely different meaning. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it actually can
all the names are puns.
Yeah, all the names are have particular meanings, and generally relate to the character's behavior, and it can be a little bit confusing until you actually really know that. But the way that it's the overall storyline does make up for that very strongly. But I would say that'd be one of the drawbacks for the American audience.
Mm-hmm.
Very reference heavy in Japanese way. Although, yes. Mike, you might want to talk about the main girl's name.
The main girl is named Kafuka. Or it sounds very suspiciously like Kafka, as in Franz Kafka.
Right.
Franz Kafka, and the author of Paranoid and...
The Mechamorphosis. Oh, wait, no, not the Mecha. I said Mechamorphosis on purpose.
Yes. But it is about a guy who turns into a bug, which very well could be an anime plot, so...
Indeed.
Yeah, and he's also the very well-known author of The Trial, which is about a guy who's has no idea what he's been accused of, and he goes through a nightmarish legal system, which is in many ways a foreshadowing of 20th century totalitarianism. So it's a very odd choice to name a girl who is a very Pollyanna-ish, very willfully optimistic because she willfully chooses not to see what's right in front of her. Like, she refers to everybody, including her parents' multiple suicide attempts, as, oh, they were just trying to grow taller. and she really seems to actually believe what she's saying. Like, though I'm assuming, given that all the people who seem to flock to this despair teacher, to this the teacher basically who is inexplicably always dressed in very traditional Japanese dress.
Right.
And he always keeps trying to hang himself all the time because it's because he sees no reason to live on account of his paranoia. Like, he's just intensely paranoid that, like, his credit card is being stolen every time he swipes his train, like rail pass, and other kind of really paranoid reasons. And, like, the school counselor tries to, like, set him straight.
Right.
And the school counselor is like this really cute woman who...
Actually, that's one of my favorite parts in the first episode when he first goes to see the school counselor. And she's kind of like, you know, I'm actually here for the students, not really so much for the teachers.
Yeah. And so basically, the show is kind of one of those... it does sort of remind me of Welcome to the NHK in that you have two very... different kinds of people who are very, I think, both broke, like psychologically very broken people. Already you can start seeing this thing where they're trying to help each other out in a way, even if it's accidental, at least in the first two episodes.
And, yeah, where he tried to jump over the train guard, the guardrail, and she pushes him, and she said, don't kill yourself!
Yeah, every attempt that she makes to try to save his life usually ends up bringing him closer to death.
Right.
And so it's because the show is just completely stuffed with irony. Like, things that exactly the opposite of what, like, the characters intend usually ends up happening. And it's really and it's also a very one of those postmodern types of shows that breaks the fourth wall all the time, kind of like Hayate a little bit, except in this case, it's usually with little snide comments that are written on the blackboard, like, beside the characters.
Okay, here's a huge-ass spoiler that you will see strawberry panties in episode 3. I said it!
Oh, yes, there's the issue of censorship in this show.
Not in episode 3, you won't.
Well, in episode 1 and 2,
right.
Yeah.
There's a guy's face, and it's a photograph, like a real photograph, it's not animated or anything, of a guy, a bald-headed guy with a mustache and glasses, who appears basically covering up all the fan service in the show.
Right, pretty much. Yeah.
And it's hilarious.
That's actually one of my favorite parts.
Yeah, and he's apparently, according to one of my commenters on the website, because I actually inquired you know, whose face that is, because I have no idea, obviously, who that could possibly be. It is actually apparently
Saddam Hussein from the dead.
Well,
his head kind of looked like the South Park thing, you know?
Yeah. It's, well, the Masked Man has his own answer to the question. Question, who is this fellow? He is Censor Fagatori, and he is there waiting to ruin otherwise serviceable anime. That's one possible answer. But there is actually a serious answer to this question. He is actually...
manga creator?
Manga he is the... The guy in the picture, according to Hashihime, is Maeda-kun, the mangaka's assistant. He shows up from time to time in the mangaka's work, and even at least in another person's work as well. So basically, this is like his second in command, maybe the guy who like fills in the details or whatever. And so basically, he is the one who's covering up all the fan service. He's also the face in the clock in the school, apparently.
Yeah.
And
you know, I wonder if that gets him chicks, dude. I really do. I wonder if, hey, you know, it was on TV. Really?
Yeah.
My face is all over the place. You haven't seen me?
I'm that big clock.
No, really, my face is all over the place.
Yeah.
In fact, in places you wouldn't expect to see me.
Yeah.
I'm all up in it.
Yep. Oh my, yep. I'm not so sure once they find out, all the girls find out exactly where his face has been.
I don't know.
Yeah. It could attract a certain kind of fangirl maybe, but like...
It's like a manga artist's assistant between my legs.
Or on my butt. Which is where he is half the time, actually. Like, seriously. Like, in first episode and second episode.
But in episode 3... Basically, they actually show it, and they kind of give you this anticipation. Is it going to drop? Is it going to drop? Oh, even if he drops his face, it's going to show. Touchdown!
Do they actually comment on it?
No, they don't comment anything. It's just you get this anticipation. You say, oh, it's going to drop. The skirt's going to drop. If he drops, is it going to see? Wait, are we going to see? Are we going to see it? Yes! Banzai! Banzai! Banzai!
And so really, and it's like, I would almost half expect them to comment on it. Like, you know, you were expecting, like, the Mr. Censor guy? You're like, you were...
To actually say something? No, anime never get that smart. I've got to tell you, I've seen anime, huh?
Hayate does. Hayate is very much all about that. I mean...
Yeah, this one probably just go, okay, we're getting a little depressing and a little too cynical, so here's some fan service.
You know, I don't find the show cynical. It's actually, to me, it's just the opposite of cynical in many ways. It has a cynical main character. But, I mean, the show is basically how, despite his cynicism, he's doing some good.
He saved that girl, like, who sits at home all the time.
Yeah. And then there's that stalker girl who now follows him around. I thought the ending of episode 2 was just absolutely brilliant. Yeah. You haven't seen it, right, Jeremy?
I have not, but I'm wondering if this is sort of a reverse story to, like, GTO. You have a similar sort of... I mean, in GTO, Onizuka is very... he's not very bright, and he's very, you know, positive in that, you know, pretty much he can, you know, accomplish anything at certain points when he's not completely discouraged by things that happen. And it just does off-the-wall crazy stunts that end up, you know, working to help out other people. And even though his intentions of getting in teaching, a.k.a. To pick up chicks... schoolgirl chicks specifically, are not the best. He ends up never really, you know, following those urges and ends up helping a lot of students, you know, inadvertently. So I wonder if it's kind of like a another take on that in a way.
It's very much a take on that. I'm in fact, I assume the reason why I like the title Goodbye, Mr. Despair is because it sounds like Goodbye, Mr. Chips, which is like probably the erst, you know, inspirational teacher story that pretty much kicked off that whole genre, I think, in the 20th century. And it's basically, it's about like how a teacher manages to inspire, you know, young people to become better people. And well, in this, yeah, in this, this is sort of like a postmodern take on it. You know, in this case, the teacher is more messed up than his students, but for some odd reason, you know, mostly accidentally, but also with the help of Kafuka, I mean, he's able to actually, yeah, rescue them. And I think eventually he's probably going to wake up to that fact.
Right.
And maybe that'll help him along with his depression or his paranoia. Or it could be that, like I speculated, maybe they'll all just end up killing each other first. Because the pack of people he's starting to draw to himself is basically everybody with major psychological issues.
Right.
I mean, and it's like a harem, too. Like, all of the people who flock to them are all, like, girls.
That's
like
right. Girls. That's right. Yeah. That's right. I see the class as a really, really, really screwed up Genshiken. Like, yeah. Genshiken is very happy, and, you know, everybody in Genshiken has a little peeves, except there's one normal guy, right? And he ended up becoming the, you guys don't know that, do you? That's okay. But anyway, like, this is like a really sick version of a Genshiken group, where everybody's kind of sick in their heads.
Yeah.
We're all get sick of watching it. No, we don't.
No, we don't. No, we don't. As long as it stays fresh. I mean, the only...
Oh, you gotta watch episode 3, I gotta tell you. You gotta watch it.
See, I don't know how long... Do you know how many episodes they're gonna be doing?
Actually, I do not offhand.
Mm-hmm.
I do not.
My guess is 12 episodes. My guess is 12 episodes at least.
12, yeah. Really? Wow. Yeah, because
they haven't. I don't think they've really released that information. I don't think they've released it.
No.
Yeah, because that's it's still brand new.
So
uh-huh. Yeah. It's really interesting also how there's a lot of stylistic mixing.
Uh-huh.
Like there are bits and pieces of different animation styles that come in like here and there. Like the opening sequence is patterned like off silent movies, I think.
Mm.
And a movie like before the 1920s or something like that, and it's got that frame, and it's actually all text, most of it, except for like this one little clip in the very beginning. And then you see, like, I think in the middle of episode 2 there was like just this random strange piece of animation which didn't seem all that connected to the story, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And well,
that seems to be kind of a thing. I mean, before they start the animation, I think at the end they offer like, you know, before we do this, let me show you this, you know, piece of animation, you know, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're usually humorous, you know, entertaining. But.
And one really interesting thing stylistically is that frequently the backgrounds are very sparse. Mm-hmm. Like, there's almost nothing in the background half the time.
Kind of look like those Japanese woodblock printings. That's what I remind me of.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. I was wondering what exactly art style... It might have been aping or kind of being paying tribute to. And that it's probably that. It's probably also...
Yuki something e, which means something of a life depiction painting.
Ukue.
But it's, right, yeah. That's it.
And there's also a new style of art, which is called the super flat style, which is kind of popular in the more artsy
today,
you know, the art scene of in Japan.
Okay.
And with the stuff that gets shown in museums and stuff
in today's world.
Yeah, like I saw a super flat exhibition. I saw a super flat exhibition actually at the Contemporary Art Museum here in Los Angeles.
That's like recently. From Matisse, Henri Matisse's generation. I mean, he does a lot of things that look absolutely flat.
Right. In this case, the super flat style is applied to anime and manga style characters.
Right.
I think, Ray, what you were going to say about ukiyo-e is, because I remember in my Japanese culture class, I'm learning about this, pictures of the floating world, is that what you're referring to? Like I think that would kind of be very fitting for, you know, what this show is kind of like. I mean, it almost, much of it actually does seem, and in a way, like you were talking about Kafka, it seems kind of like, in many ways, a lot of dream sequences. Like, divided up. It's, yeah.
Not the Eva-style dream sequences, mind you. Something actually interesting.
Right.
Right. Instead of flashing text, and you have some actual imagery, right? So.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, too, not to necessarily inadvertently plug one fan subgroup over another, but I'm just curious. So, which fan subs you actually watch, guys, because I watched the AFK version, and at the end, when I was talking about the one of the things of making it kind of hard to relate here in some ways is because of the puns and the play on Japanese, but they do a really good job of actually explaining a lot of that at the end of the show, certain things.
They do.
So.
Wow. Yeah, they put a little culture note at the end, yeah.
I can't say much because I watch Chinese fan subs, and sometimes some groups are lazy, they don't translate stuff on the blackboard, but when they do, I pretty much get really what's going on. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, basically, I watched the AFK ones because those are the only ones actually that have been released.
Right.
And AFK contains very extensive culture notes at the end of every episode. Like, they explain in full all the puns. Wow. Like, all the... They even tell you, like, you know, this, if you write it out with this kind of spacing, with this many strokes, then it will produce this meaning and stuff like that. Right. So they're very good about that.
We definitely have to give a shout out to these guys. And good job, guys and girls at the AFK. I was going to say KFC, but...
That's one thing, actually, where I think fan subbers do a better job than sometimes the official DVD releases. Yeah.
And actually, though, we are kind of running short on time, but I know that was what we were wanting to talk about earlier. So now might be a good time to actually kind of move on to some issues of anime becoming mainstream and some issues of, like, you know, fan subs and how relevant are they now? How important are they now? Are they still important, you know? Mm-hmm. Are they less important? Are they more important? So these are things we'd like to talk about. What do you guys think?
Yep.
Let's go into the next session.
Right. We're just going to close this episode with a little discussion about the state of the industry, and especially the state of the fan sub community, of which all three of us are eager participants in. That's where we get our new stuff, especially, and that's how we stay up to date on the most current anime. But of course, in the most recent AX, one of the keynote speeches or the keynote sessions was about, you know, fan subbing, and it was from a very industry, you know, oriented or industry friendly point of view, and basically, and the general mood from what I know, I didn't go to it, but I've read some reports of it, is that it was very, very bitterly anti-fan sub. They were basically saying that fan sub was killing the industry, like literally, and that they don't know how much longer at least the American branches of the companies could survive, you know, with the existence of fan subbing. And they basically were trying to get everybody who was in the room, you know, to basically stop downloading fan subs, even for stuff that wasn't licensed, because they just felt that's really killing the industry.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, my first statement to that is that, first of all, that's not going to work. You can't, it's not something you can really necessarily stop until you, like, pass laws. And I've read some things online about, you know, some people in other countries having some prosecution. I don't know.
Singapore,
yeah. Actually was where I was reading that about. And I mean, it could well happen here. Although I think the thing that actually is keeping that from happening is you really don't have with anime, like, the big MPAA, you know, behind any movement like that. I mean, it's pretty much... Yeah. Anime companies are a little more of the small fry on that, and in some sense we've got to be a little bit sympathetic to their plight, in a sense, if they're wanting to bring anime over here, to say, you know. And I think it is important. I mean, in all honesty, I probably can't say that I always do this, but to try to, if you're a fan of a series and if you you have downloaded it, try to buy it. But on the other side of it is that there are other things that are hurting the industry as well, and that are not being, I think, is seriously taken into account, because it's easier to find a scapegoat, to find someone to place the blame on. And while it does have an effect, I won't lie. Right. We all know it does. But it's much easier to find a villain and then to look inwardly and say, are there things that we as an industry are doing wrong that are hurting us? And one of the things we're pointing out is the cultural notes and the better translation, the better subtitles that you get in fan subs, the quicker releases You know, you just can't get that. The convenience of having, instead of stacks and stacks of DVDs, being able to store them all on your hard drive. Yeah. Same thing with MP3s, but that's another thing. But
sorry, you have two schools of people. One school of people are, let's just face it, it's like most of us. Okay, we love the convenience. You click it, and it's there. But even I go out buy some CDs sometimes. Why? Just because I love the artwork. And that's the other school of people who says, look, we want what comes with it. Remember about like in the 90s, like sometimes I'll buy a CD, and it doesn't have to be any place in general. Okay. And what it has is, it's a CD and a cover. One piece of paper as cover. Nothing. Has some artwork on it, sure. Has some work in the back, artwork in the back, sure. Nothing else. Today's CDs, as far as I've noticed, they try to include stuff. You know, like lyrics, they've always had lyrics in Asia. I guess it's because they think translation is important or it's cheaper. Unfortunately, well, that's the truth.
Maybe just for like karaoke.
Yeah.
Want to know what the songs say so they can sing them?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be it too. But there are stuff, you know, booklets, like information, you know, sometimes a little minor photo journal. But back in the 90s, I pick up a CD. I'm looking at it. I'm going, okay, this has a piece of paper in there. I don't know. Even though it wasn't that expensive, I didn't feel like paying 12 to 15 bucks for that. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I know it takes a lot of commercial and all that stuff and promotion, but, you know, CDs used to go up to $20 even. And wow. You want a piece of paper with that? Or would you like a piece of paper with your CD? And I don't know. Anime DVDs, I bought some of them. I bought Bubblegum Crisis. I bought Bubblegum Crisis, the TV series. But I don't know. For some other anime stuff, just the qualities look terrible. You know, and I'm going to talk a little bit about dubbing just for like a few seconds. But come on, man. Some of those people can't dub. I'm sorry. These people, were they even trained as voice actors? There's a big difference between regular actors and voice actors.
Mm. Totally. I think many of these people are trained. They're just not... It's not as big of a thing, I think, here. Since, like, you have so much animation in Japan and it's a lot less here, it is really a career to aspire to. I mean, and people, there's a lot more competition. I think there is competition here for what animation, like mainstream animation. I'm not talking about anime. Because I think anime animation dubbing is a totally, voice acting for that is a totally different thing, because you're basically taking an original creation that already has something instead of being part of the creative process in the character, which is how they're kind of taking it on. That's another thing, is they take it on as like, well, I'm creating a version of this character, the American voice for this character, instead of looking at what was originally created and trying to, in many ways, trying to emulate that more and give the original feel of it.
Yep.
They try to create this character from just looking at a script and maybe a couple clips here and there. From what I understand, some people may correct me on that, but and I actually took voice acting classes, so I do know a bit about it. I think I can speak a little bit about it. I was interested in going into that for the reason that I felt that the dubs were so bad, and I was hoping to maybe get involved and bring some more quality to them as a fan. Unfortunately, I have no real talent for it, so that's where I kind of got stopped. But I think there is kind of the different schools, like you're saying, different schools. Like, some people like the dubs, and some people don't, and then there's the in-between that's like, oh, they could, you know, take it or leave it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's the thing. I think overwhelmingly, many hardcore fans of anime just really could do without the dubs. Now, I mean, that is a big debate, and that's a pretty strong statement, but I think you could actually get a huge market just based on subtitled versions alone. And I don't understand why they don't pursue that market with, at the very least, digital versions themselves, released in a quicker fashion with higher quality subtitles, hiring maybe some of these fan subbers instead of like...
Exactly. Why not hire these? Yeah. Why hire these? Fire whatever people you got on your staff. They suck. I'm sorry. Hire these fan subbers. They'd be more than happy to get a job with for you.
Some of them actually have. So ADV actually has hired some fan subbers.
ADV.
ADV. And Viz basically is starting to try to experiment with what
right.
you just said.
Correct.
Digital distribution, correct. Sub only, quick, not long after it was released. And originally they were going to do that with Death Note, but I think there must have been either some technical issues that they had to work out first. But in either case, that program hasn't yet to start, mm-hmm. and Death Note has already finished its run. So
I hope they do this and do it well, and because to show the other companies that are strictly. And they may be part of this themselves, you know, bitching and moaning about fan subbers killing the industry. Instead of, I mean, you can sit there, I don't care what kind of situation you're in, you can sit there and bitch and moan all day about whatever situation is in life, challenge that comes to you, or you can try to, like, overcome it and, you know, find another way to accomplish what you want to do and maybe become better in the process. Or you can just be, you know, as the stereotypical in the past is, I think many Japanese viewed Americans, the lazy, fat, lazy Americans that just, you know, didn't want to work hard to make stuff happen and wanted to stick with tired old business models just because it was convenient and it's what they know.
I'm telling you, these guys forgot who brought anime over to States in the first place. The fan subbers. Yeah. Which some right. of you, oh, I don't know, which they might have been some of these folks who actually got the fan subs on VHS tapes and say, oh, this is great, we can make money out of it. And then their eyes just became dollar signs. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And they became cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. You know, instead of pan-ci, 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 it's cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. And right. they forgot why they even did it in the first place.
It's right. interesting. I do think, however, to be fair, that the anime companies in general are much more fan friendly and much more responsive.
You talk about ADV or Bandai,
like are all of them in general compared to the MPAA or the RIA.
Okay,
yeah, yeah, totally. But, yeah, I we have to give them, you know,
okay, fine.
Some leeway in that. Yeah,
much more.
Okay, fine.
But I would say I agree with Ray in that, you know, I think they've lost sight. In many ways, of what, you know, the fans really want. And they really just don't want to hear the opposing views. That's why they would have a panel where they would try to convince people, you know, hey, yes, it's the evil fan subbers, you know, you need to stop this, help us stop it. It's like, you know, you're recruiting like little like Nazi block watchers or something. I mean, what is this? I know, it's pretty extreme. I mean... But it just does kind of have that overtone, even if you don't mean it that way. It just like it seems a little, eh.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I think they really need to wake up to, if they haven't already woken up to it already, is that the anime fan community is incredibly digitally like
savvy.
Totally. And so they really need to understand that their market, especially their market, even compared, you know, to the general. Like college age market that, you know, downloads music on LimeWire or something like that, you know, is very, very, very internet focused. And so I think the key is something like the iTunes store. $2 per episode or maybe even less if you for like a dubbed version.
And right? especially if you could get some sort of deal with the companies to actually get the episode before it airs, to have a chance to look at it, work up the subtitling, maybe get the script beforehand and write up a subtitle script. As soon as you get it, maybe even just before it airs, start to, you know, time code that thing, get it out so fast that it's actually released as, you know, the episode hits TV or slightly after, to get the 1-2 punch on, you know, the fan subbers. And many of them actually will probably not be doing it, because the whole point of why they're doing it is many of them is a code in many ways to get, you know, people a chance to see these things that wouldn't otherwise see them. I mean, for crying out loud, the Japanese viewer, the average Japanese viewer, can watch this on TV and not have to, you know, like, why should...
There's a logistic difficulty to that, though. I mean, they don't know which show will sell. Okay. Like, the thing with fan subber is, not every fan subber is a good prediction of what will sell. Some people just do what they want. You know, that's basically where it came from. So the company either has to get somebody who's very, very big, good prediction, or they have to, let's say, go find a group of fan subber folks that they always tend to sub all the hits from the past. But that's difficult, right? And then do the same thing they do. And then, like you said, maybe say, okay, I look at this show's concept and I think this is possible. And then try to work out a deal. But the another logistic problem is that it takes time. That's the problem with deals. It always takes time.
In many ways, they're trying to work the deals much faster now, too, to where they are getting them much ahead of time. And you know, with like, for instance, an example would be like Death Note. I mean, I think that was smart, actually, of Viz to try to go for that one, because the obvious factor realization of it is the manga was a huge hit.
Right.
So, like, why wouldn't you try to... I mean, it's potential that somebody could completely ruin the anime, but, you know, you'd have to work pretty hard, I think, to ruin that, something like that. So, you know, I think it's still possible, and there is logistic problems, but I think it's still not totally impossible.
Yeah. It right now, though, there is still a pretty long gap between when a show is broadcast and when it's licensed, with only one exception. A lot of anime are being co-funded by the American branches of the licensing companies, especially Genion USA.
Right. I think that's a different solution.
Yeah. That's a different solution. Like, Black Lagoon is a classic example. Mm-hmm. Black Lagoon was co-funded by Genion USA, and it very much seems like a show that at least had an eye toward the American market from the start. So that was licensed. Their fan subs of that almost didn't appear at all, because it was basically announced as licensed from the very start.
Right.
And only the fan subbers who didn't care about that basically subbed it.
Maybe
and
these are the people they should go. They should say something about. Not everyone.
Well, yeah. Yeah, basically, recently, of course, Bandai announced that they would sue anybody who fan-subbed Ghost in the Shell Solid State Society for that same reason, because that was also co-funded, I believe, by the Bandai USA branch.
Yeah, and I think most fan-subbers are good people. They're not going to be that stupid.
I mean, there has been a long-time kind of unofficial compact between the anime companies and the fan subbers, you know, and goes, you know, basically once it's been licensed for distribution in the United States or North America, then we will stop distributing our fan subs.
Right.
Correct.
And that the vast majority of reputable fan subbers still follow that rule. That's basically what underwrites AnimeSuki.com. And I think that model is still, for the most part, workable, because, again, there is still a fairly long gap between release and license for most shows.
And it gives an opportunity for some, you know, pre-marketing to see, you know, how something is doing in many ways.
I don't think anybody, no American marketing firm, probably could have predicted the popularity of Haruhi Suzumiya. It was simply a groundswell of fan support that made it into a phenomenon. And, you know, and basically, and that pretty much ensures that it's going to probably be a success over here.
Right.
And it actually wasn't licensed for a really long time.
Yeah, that's right.
I think there was a bidding war that was going on.
But I'm telling you, the Bandai people could have announced that the about the signing thing early, so get more sales, right?
Right. I got a comment from Bainu about the last podcast we did, and apparently Bainu is the owner of Anime Genesis, who we promoted in the previous episode.
Uh-huh.
And he had a press pass, so he was able to go to the private press conference for the SOS Brigade and other stuff. And basically he reports that a good number of all the things that went wrong with the SOS Brigade are really because of Bandai.
Exactly.
The Bandai handlers.
That's right.
So, and so that's, if you want to blame anybody, apparently that's where the blame lies. And he has, again, he was able to get to do some private interviews with SOS Brigade, so he's pretty lucky.
Okay, that's what we're striving for.
Yep. Yep. Please, give us press passes.
Just say something really bad about you. Just kidding. Just kidding! Okay, you don't have to send the dogs and the guards and the stormtroopers and the Nazis and all that people after us.
Right.
Please, just give me an interview, fans. Anyway, I think this is pretty much it for this episode.
Unless
you guys have anything to add.
No, we can continue the discussion next time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff we can discuss. I mean, obviously, this is a topic that affects all of us as fans.
Yep.
And it's going to affect our, you know, the stuff that we watch and we love to talk about. So, this has been Anime Diet Radio Episode 9. I'm your host, Michael Huang. Please.
And sign out, this is Raymond Hugh from Taipei. Still morning.
Okay, this is Jeremy from Los Angeles. How's that? Is that better?
Good. Sick.
Ain't over till the fat lady sings. All right, see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.